Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
I remember looking at my mom being like, I need help researching, can your adult dog become a diabetic alert dog? He alerts 15 to sometimes like up to 40 minutes ahead of my CGM. He will be sound asleep and he will wake up to wake me up at night.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Living with type 1 diabetes can be incredibly challenging when you don't have the right tools, strategies, and mindset. That's why we created the Decide and Conquer Group Coaching Program, a signature 12-week program designed to empower you to take control of your diabetes and your life, both in numbers and in mindset. We call this program the DCB, and it's more than just a coaching program. It's a community where over 400 women have reclaimed their lives and found a new sense of confidence. Our coaches, who also live with type 1 diabetes, understand what you're going through and are here to help you break through the barriers holding you back. This life-changing program only happens a few times a year, so don't miss your chance to join our next round starting soon. Apply for coaching today through the link in the show notes and take the first step towards a life of freedom and confidence with type 1 diabetes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. So you know how often we hear the advice, don't let diabetes define you. Well, my guest today, Sarah Lerner, is changing the narrative and sharing how actually letting diabetes define her was what helped her to find confidence and empowerment in her first year and a half of diagnosis. Some background on Sarah: she is based in New York City, is a social worker and nonprofit professional, was diagnosed with type 1 just after her 25th birthday, and is a graduate of Risely's Decide and Conquer Group Coaching Program for women with type 1 diabetes that we run a few times a year, otherwise known as the DCB. In this episode, I talk to Sarah about her journey in this newly diagnosed stage of life and specifically the things that she has done to expedite getting to a place of acceptance and confidence with her management and with herself. Sarah talks about the importance of finding community, the logistics of training for her first half marathon with diabetes, life with her diabetic alert dog, Louie, and so much more. Whether you are newly diagnosed or further into your journey with diabetes, there is something that you will get out of this episode, I promise. And without further ado, help me welcome my guest Sarah to the show, and let's rise. Sarah Lerner, so excited to be here with you today. Thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me, Lauren.
I would love if you can open up with sharing us a story about a time that you reclaimed your rise with type 1 diabetes. Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, I knew this question was coming and it was still a tough one to answer. I was talking with a friend the other day and I was saying, like, there's so many instances where there have been small wins throughout and big wins too, but it's been hard to piece together one moment of reclaiming my rise. And then a few weeks ago, I got a rejection letter for a Modern Love article I had submitted back in September or in October. And the title of it had been A Lazy Pancreas and a Loyal Dog, A Modern Love Story. And I didn't really care that it got rejected because, you know, the point of it was really being able to reflect on my time. When I wrote it, it had been just over a year with type 1. And I really wanted to reflect on the year, what I had learned, more so than just all of the carb counting and how to use a pump and transition from MDI to a pump and all of the basics, but really like where my growth had been, how I had found silver linings, how I had recognized how much I had learned from the disease, the privilege I had with the disease, getting to, you know, train my dog to be a diabetic alert dog, finding community and friends with type 1. There were so many things that I'd gotten out of it and so many ways that I grew and learned to really advocate for myself for the first time. You know, there had been small ways I'd learned to advocate for myself, but I think being the youngest of four kids, I had gone with the flow for a lot of my life. And this was the first time I really had to start, you know, prioritizing me, my health, and the choices that I was making. And so I think that, well, the article got rejected, it wasn't that was the submission that was the reclaiming the rise, but it was being able to pause and reflect and see the story of that year with type one and really say like, wow, like this was the biggest growth in my entire life that happened because of something that a lot of people would say like, oh, I'm so sorry you had this. I'm so sorry this happened. Like this moment that people assume is only bad, it actually led to so much good.
So you were diagnosed at 25 years old, really recent. Is it two years yet?
Not yet. June 7th will be 2 years.
Every time I talk, like, is it 2 years yet? Like, where are we on the timeline? So yeah. June will be 2 years. When you were diagnosed, did you, in your like gut feeling, did you feel like this was something that you were going to be very open and vulnerable about and eventually get to a place of submitting an article about how this has changed your life? Or how did you relate to it in regards to how it was going to impact your life while it was happening and you were sitting in that, you know, what was it the emergency room, hospital? Tell us a little bit about that.
So, I mean, I was getting sicker for a few weeks. I think it was a similar story to now what I hear for a lot of people. At the time, I didn't recognize it in myself. I ended up getting hospitalized. I was in the hospital for a few days here in New York. I think it was such a whirlwind that while I was in the moment, while it was happening, while I was getting diagnosed, I wasn't thinking about like, oh, what is the rest of my life going to look like? I was just like thinking about the right now at that moment. And that was, you know, when I figured out I needed to go to the hospital, my brother who lived nearby had sprinted to CVS to get a CGM a glucose meter for me. Cause I was like, I don't believe this. Like I need to test it before going to the hospital. And he had come in moments and my mom had gotten on a train from Baltimore. I had family and friends kind of surrounding me in that moment, getting on planes to get to me within hours. And so like, I was so overwhelmed with support in a good way that I was really feeling grateful from day one. Like I wasn't feeling like, oh no, what's going to happen. But I was like, I got into the hospital. I had great medical care. Like I didn't know what was next. And so I don't think I imagined like, you know, it really leaning into it in the way that I have today or that I would be writing an article. But I think I didn't really take a second to really be like, oh, this is what life is going to look like now. I just kind of like kept going.
And as a kid, was that always the type of person that you were like from a young age? Like what characteristics in childhood that you developed do you think helped you attack the diagnosis that way or relate to it in that way?
I mean, I've always liked being busy. I've always been a little overprogrammed. That has always been the case, whether it was sports when I was younger, getting involved with different extracurriculars through like all of college. I remember the first few weeks of college, my mom and I were on the phone and she said, did I send you to college or to camp? Like you have like this activity and you're, you know, I was doing EMT training and I was in tennis class and I was on a flag football team. And she's like, what are you doing with your schedule? So like my default has always been to overprogram myself. And I think it, you know, my parents both worked full time. They worked really hard, but they always made time for family and for us. And so I think it was like those values of like, you stay busy, you work hard, you do what you love, and like you prioritize the relationships and the people in your life that are important. So I think I definitely carried those values with me. And I think the part about, you know, like instantly recognizing my privilege with the disease was just like, one, I'm a social worker. And so I think part of it is just understanding like, that's my, you know, that's the lens I view the world with, and seeing that like, here I was like having this diagnosis that I know other people have. And the first thing they have to think about is like, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay for this? And I was thinking like, that wasn't a concern. And I was so grateful for that. Like I knew, you know, I would be okay in that matter. And so it was like, how do I take this like not so great news and make the most of it? And maybe even in that moment, probably knew on some level that I would use it at some point, you know, professionally as well to try to make the world a better place.
Yeah. And I said this to you before we pressed record, but you in a little under 2 years of getting diagnosed, you have like made so many friends in this space. You have come so far in your journey of accepting it to just using it to even just empower others. And you actually are defined by it in a way. And you're not, your journey hasn't looked like a lot of other people's where it's like, I'm going to for 10 years, kind of like put this on the back burner or keep it in the shadows. Like you have embraced it. To that end, what other things have allowed you, do you think, to get to this place so quickly of fully, what I see from the outside, at least, of full acceptance?
Yeah, well, as I was telling Lauren right before we started recording them, when I was debating, you know, what I had to say today, my brother-in-law had said to me, like, one thing I really admire is that, you know, you've never let this diagnosis define you. And I immediately said to him, like, I feel the opposite. Like, I have let it be part of my identity and I have let it define me and I haven't, you know, hit it in any way, but I've chosen how it defines me. I've chosen the ways that it shows up in my life. And so I think when people think of like letting something define you, there's usually a negative connotation there. And for me, it hasn't been. There are days when, you know, I get frustrated and I get annoyed and I don't want to change my pod and it's time for bed. And I'm like, oh, now I have to do this. But like at the end of the day, like on a day-to-day basis, like I'm choosing how this shows up in my life and I'm choosing how it defines me. And I think leaning into the community so early was something that really helped with that. And I got really lucky there. Like I, you know, a few weeks after diagnosis, my family kind of whisked me with them that summer to look out for me and help me land on my feet and have that support. And so I was in Maine with them for a few weeks and I wandered into a store in this very small town. The store owner saw my CGM and she was asking me all these questions and showing me her daughter's Dexcom numbers. And I was like, I don't really know the answer to these. I got diagnosed 3 weeks ago. And she's like, oh, you have to follow this girl, Lauren, on Instagram. My daughter loves her. And that's how I got plugged into the diabetes community in many ways so early on. Because in Maine, somebody told me about you and I learned about Risley and I found myself at a meetup, I think 3.5 weeks after I was diagnosed in Central Park. And so I started meeting other people with type 1. Prior to that, I had only known one person really who I'd seen living a full life. And so I think, you know, because I knew her before I was diagnosed and I knew she lived a full life, I was like, wow, like you can accept this, you can live with this and you can, you know, be like quote unquote normal, whatever that means, and live a pretty typical life even with this disease. So I think having that example and then finding a community of other people who were having high points, who were having low points, who were being open about sharing those with strangers in Central Park, I think that led to me knowing that I wanted more of that community and finding ways to build it.
Yeah, I remember that. We were all just like sitting on towels, like in this big circle, and everyone was like, oh, I've had diabetes for 2 years. I've had diabetes for 10 years. I've had diabetes for 25 years, whatever it was. And then you were like, I've literally had it for a month. And we were like,
and everyone was like, why are you here?
we're like, how are you doing? Like, we should focus this all on you. But no, and that was like your entry point. And I think all to say, like, yeah, you jumped in, you know, so quickly. I'm curious because so far talking, it's like a lot of the positive things and the acceptance that has come, you know, really quickly to you and a little bit more, let's say, you know, easy than others. Are there things that you miss about pre-diabetes life? And if so, what are those things?
Like, to be completely honest, I haven't totally thought too much about pre-diabetes life. I think one thing that I joked with a friend who has type 1 with this weekend was we were like, man, we really wish we could sit on the couch and mindlessly eat popcorn and candy while we watch this Netflix movie. And then we were like, wait a second, like we can do that. Like we know how to do that. Like it's not what we're traditionally taught of like count the carbs and, you know, dose and then eat. But like we could make a rough estimate at the beginning. We could up our basal rates and we could just let it ride and eat and correct if we need, eat more if we need, and like, you know, be smart about it, but like still do it and not think about it during the movie. And we did it. At least I did it. Had a great time. It didn't go perfectly, but I wasn't, you know, upset about it. So I think part of it was like at the beginning, it was limiting. Like I was eating the same meal for breakfast every single day. I was eating the same meal for lunch every day and dinner every day. And at some point I got more flexible. I started eating out more. I started getting more comfortable. And a lot of that was because I was, you know, learning and being given the tools and doing coaching and so many different resources that I was able to take advantage that help build that confidence. So I would say in like those days, I was like, oh, I really miss going and eating Italian. But like now, if I want to eat Italian, like I go eat Italian, or like I like worked out before type one, but I never had run more than 3 miles consistently probably in my life, maybe outside of like high school sports if we had to do that. And like now I'm training for a half marathon. So I'm doing more now with type one than I did before, that there aren't so many things that I'm like, I really miss this. I miss, you know, sometimes sleeping through the night when a CGM wakes me up. But it doesn't happen that often anymore that I'm sitting here like grieving it.
Going from eating the same thing every day, which I think is very common when you get diagnosed, you're like, okay, like I will have exactly 30 carbs for breakfast and exactly 60 carbs for lunch or whatever that looks like, to a place of I'm going to have Italian food and I'm going to eat popcorn and I'm going to be more just flexible with the food. There is a story I remember you told me, like this was years after you did. So you did the group coaching program with us in 2022, shortly after you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear the story until like maybe a couple of months ago, where you said there was, with your accountability group, you guys ended up getting on a call and being like, let's all like take the food that we're scared of and just try to eat it together. Can you share a little bit more about how that came to be and how it went and just the dynamics?
I mean, the DCB was great for me in so many reasons. Like you said, I did it in fall of 22. I got diagnosed in June 2022. So while on one hand, it was like overwhelming and so much, and there were people who had diabetes for so long. On the other hand, it was like diabetes 101 plus community plus people I could learn from, which is exactly where I like to be, like being able to learn from other people's experiences. And so I met a lot of really great people from that, but they weren't all local to New York. And so I did end up, you know, getting to know the girls from New York and forming relationships with them. And they're, you know, some of my very close friends now, but I also formed a relationship with two girls that weren't in New York, and we decided we were going to get on Zoom and we were going to eat the things that freaked us out. You know, for one person, I think it was a hamburger, a cheeseburger. For me, it was like a slice of pizza. And we just said, like, we're going to commit to doing this, and we're going to hold each other accountable, and we're going to eat those things. And that was, you know, a really like, sometimes you need a friend. Like, you just need somebody to do it with you and who gets it. And going out with one of my friends or family members who doesn't have type one, like, it wasn't going to be the same. Like, I know any of them would have been like, yeah, I'll go get a slice of pizza with you. But it's not the same as like me, like going with my spreadsheet and recording right. What happened and like doing it again, you know, the next week to like learn and figure out the strategy. And so to be able to do that with people who understood it made all the difference in feeling comfortable and confident and knowing that like, this may not go well. And like the first time I ate pizza, it went, I learned from it. Like, I wouldn't even say it didn't go well, because like it allowed me to do better the next time and to understand better for the next time. So for me, so much of it was like data collection and like always remembering the phrase of like staying curious and not critical. Like I, as I was learning new foods, like that was what I really held on to, was like, how can I like not see this number and be like, ah, oh, like I messed up, and instead be like, okay, like, what can I do better the next time?
Right. And I think it's hard for people who don't have type 1 diabetes to really fully understand why it can be so scary to just eat a slice of pizza, right? Like, I think it can come off from somebody, you know, who doesn't have it as a, you know, just try it and like, well, you'll learn from it. And it's very much just like a objective viewpoint of it. But there is so many emotions attached to trying something that feels very scary. So for you, what really like were those emotions like specifically that came up for you in this like newly diagnosed stage where you're like going outside your box with food or exercise? Like what were you feeling that maybe somebody from the outside couldn't really see?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to like remember day to day now, cause it feels so distant, but it wasn't that long ago. We're talking about a year ago when I couldn't walk the dog without my blood sugar dropping low, and I couldn't, you know, imagine exercising in the afternoon, because I had in my head, like, I only, you know, can exercise first thing in the morning with no insulin on board, because I didn't know the strategies yet. I went for a 5-mile run yesterday afternoon at the end of the day, which like even 3 months ago, I would have told you was an impossibility and that there's no way I could have done it without going low. And I think I stayed between like probably 87 and 125 the entire time. So I think part of it is that like, as I've learned more, I forget about the things that were harder. But like for me, so much about it was control. Like, I am a control freak. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist. And so like controlling and staying like really serious about the numbers has been something I've needed to work really hard to let go of a little bit, because it's hard to not measure like your, when you have numbers that you're attached to all day long, it's hard not to measure your success by them. And so for me, it's been being able to take a step back and say like, my success is not necessarily staying in range for this meal. It's about like, what did I learn? And did I feel good? And do I know what to do the next time? Instead of being like, oh, like I went high 3 hours after, or, oh, like I dropped pretty low after this, like this didn't go so well. Like if I did that after every meal now and felt that way that I did a year ago, like I would never want to eat out. But now I can just be like, okay, like this strategy might not have worked as well. Or like, you know what, in my gut, I knew I should have set that temp basal higher for 6 hours and I only did 4 hours. And like, you can see right after 4 hours, like I started to spike. And so now instead of being like upset about it, or, you know, really feeling badly that the strategy didn't go as planned, it's just like, all right, like this is more data that I can use in the future. And the control piece is like, I think it's going to be a lifelong journey for me. Like I've looked at your Instagram and seen, you know, you doing days without CGMs. Like my biggest growth point probably would be that like, I've never gone, I think, more than 3 hours without a CGM since my diagnosis. And part of me is like, I have this technology, why not use it and rely on it? And like, I also have my dog who will back me up if something happens overnight and will wake me up and things like that. But then at the same time, I'm like, what if I'm running this half marathon and my CGM breaks? Like, I'm going to be a mess. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so like, it's not all perfect. Like there are days that are really hard. There are days where anxiety kicks in. There are things that happen where I'm like, oh no, like this is not good. Like, what am I going to do here? But instead of trying to stay focused on them, I'm always thinking about like, what's next? What can we do better the next time? Like what, you know what? Maybe I should do a day without a CGM and see how that goes before the half marathon. And then it won't be as much of a worry on that day in March.
Right. And I think too, it's the compounding actions that you're taking that are leading over time or have led over time to increased intuition and increased confidence. And you have this expanded tool set and all these strategies and knowledge that you know kind of like what to maneuver when something doesn't work versus I'm high and I have no idea why and I don't know how to get different outcomes next time I do this. So there's so much empowerment that now can, you know, can come from that. Yesterday you said you did a 5 mile run and you stayed between 80 and 125. And you are training currently for the New York City Half Marathon. Is that?
Yeah, the United Half.
The United
Half. I think, yeah, New York City Half, something like that. I don't know.
And I'm like, New York City Half Marathon doesn't sound like it's a thing.
I called it the Brooklyn Half for the first few months of training. And apparently that is a different race and it's not that. So it starts in Brooklyn. It ends in Central Park. It's in March. I think it's the United Half, but or the NYC Half. I'm not really sure the official title.
Okay. But you were running 13.1?
Yeah.
13.1. Okay. We got that right. 13.1 miles. And you, I don't believe like have an extensive running background. Is that, that's correct,
right? No. It had just been maybe 3 miles, 4 miles before I started this running journey.
So what made you want to do the marathon and or half marathon and what has been your training process leading up to it?
Yeah. Well, a few years ago, one of my college roommates ran the marathon. This was before I had diabetes. And that day in New York is so electric. Like for anyone who has been there, who has heard the cheers, like it's really hard to like watch that happen and not be like, I kind of want to do this. Like, I kind of want to know what this is like. And that was November before I got diagnosed in June. And so it had lingered for a day or two then of like, this is something I want to do. And it had gone away. And then I got sick. And then I was like, this is never something I'm going to be able to do. I can't even walk my dog without going low. Like I can't, you know, figure out how to exercise. Like, how is this going to happen? And then I started to figure out my workout patterns. I started to figure out, you know, how to gain more control when I felt out of control. For me, part of that was switching from MDI to a pump. Like, I was so worried, I remember, about making that switch and feeling like I was losing control. And for me, at least, it felt like I gained so much control being able to manipulate the pump and learn how to do that. And that's really what, you know, my care team had pushed me to go to the pump was for exercise purposes. And it made all of the difference in the world for me. And so then I started feeling more comfortable after I really started on Omnipod and figuring out like how to exercise. But like, running was not still in the picture. And then somebody I had met through the DCB and who has become part of my core group of girls here in New York who have type 1 ran the marathon in November. And it was this moment where all of us, I think, from our group made it out to cheer Megan on as she ran the marathon, her first marathon. She had done the half beforehand. She, you know, had type 1 for a really long time, went through the DCB with us and was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to run the half and then I'm going to run the marathon. And so we were all out there with our signs and cheering her on. And I was back in that environment of like, oh my God, the marathon. And I was like, well, if Megan can do it and she has diabetes, like, what's stopping me? And I was like, part of me was like, I don't know if I would have ever done this before having type 1. Like, I had had the itch before, but I didn't have the follow through. But now I have like a chip on my shoulder of like proving that there's nothing that I can't do with type 1 that, you know, anybody else can do. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. Still not sure about the marathon, but I was like, let's start baby steps and sign up for the half marathon. So I signed up for the half to do it with JDRF in March. And one of my brothers was like, I'm in, I'll do this with you. So he's been training and my sister was like, oh wow, like the two of you are doing this, like, aww, I'm in as well. And then she realized that she's away for her kids' spring break, but she's like, I'm going to do all the training with you. And so my brother lives a little further away. My sister and I live really close together. So we've done most of our runs together at the beginning, some of the smaller runs, not so much, but we do our long runs on the weekend together. We do our short runs during the week together. My dog does all the runs with me and will alert while we're running, which is awesome. So it's been this, like, it's been another example of like, this was, you know, inspired by the New York City type 1 community. And now it's like my personal little army of support system has swarmed me to really get there. I have a friend who's running it as well. And everyone joined the JDRF team and is really like coming around this like Sarah running with diabetes storyline here. And it's been a great crossover of the diabetes community and my own support system.
And it just means so much more when you have type 1 diabetes. Like, yes, it's this like element of you want to prove it to other people that like, look what we can do with type 1 diabetes. It doesn't stop us. But also it's just, you know, personally an achievement like that means so much more now than if you would have ran it, you know, prior to your diagnosis. So
yeah. And it hasn't been without emotion. Like, now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, I ran 8 miles last weekend. Like, if we can get there, like, we'll get to 13. But like everything, like, it hasn't been this like rainbows and unicorns process. Like, I remember early on over, you know, the winter holidays, I was with my siblings and we were like, we're going to run together. And I was like, okay, but like, you have to go at my pace. And I was totally irrationally annoyed in this situation where they're like, okay, like, why are you getting upset? Like, we'll run at your pace. And I was like, no, but like, you don't understand. Like, I need you running like behind me so I don't feel pressured to go to your pace, because like, I'm worried about like staying alive and like managing my blood sugar for the first time running. And like, that is so stressful for me that like, I don't want to worry about like being competitive with you guys. And they were like, we never said we were going to be competitive. And it was like, it was all on me. Like, I was the one who owed apologies there, but it was like, there's these elements of like anxiety and stress that come with diabetes that are really hard to express. And I think my family and my friends do a wonderful job trying to understand, but there are certain things that they're never going to be able to understand without really living with the disease.
And like putting yourself in this situation, or not situation, but putting purposely choosing this type of challenge, you're growing so much. And it's also probably highlighting the areas that, you know, you have to, I don't want to say you have to grow in, but like would be advantageous for you to grow in. Like, for instance, like how you relate to the other people around you running, or how you relate to what if something, you know, your blood sugar goes high or low, how are you going to handle it? Because you're just getting more experience from it. And you're proving to yourself that like, yes, I can do this. And I am, you know, so excited for you and, you know, to see you cross that finish line with your diabetic alert dog, Louie. We have to talk about this. Because you've mentioned him like multiple times throughout the episode and everybody's probably listening like, Lauren, ask her about Louie, the diabetic alert dog. So I've met Louie. Louie is the cutest. And can you share a little bit about how you got to that decision of training Louie and what that process has been like?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you asked, you know, what was the thought process in the hospital? Like, where was I then? Where did I see myself going? Louie was part of that story. So I already had Louie when I was diagnosed. He was about a year and a half. And I had heard a little bit about service dogs and diabetic alert dogs, but not extensively. But in that moment, in my hospital bed, I had like lost my vision briefly when I was diagnosed. So like I wasn't even reading like texts on my phone at this time. And I remember looking at my mom being like, I need help researching. Can your adult dog become a diabetic alert dog? And so I was like in my hospital bed, like brainstorming like how Louis was going to be my silver lining here. And I do think it's helped me so much to have throughout this whole journey such a positive place to put work and energy and love and frustrations and overcoming that like into this training process with Louis. I found a program. I reached out to Annie, the trainer from MediDogs from the hospital. You know, we had a consult scheduled like within a week, and Louis was training within probably 2 weeks of me getting diagnosed. He was in this owner training program where, you know, I was Zooming with Annie twice a week. I was posting daily homework in this group with other people who are training their dogs. So we had a community element there as well. So there were a few, there are dogs for, you know, all sorts of different medical alerts, but several that are working on diabetic alert dog training. And so I had another community that I had created kind of right off the bat of my diagnosis. And it was just an amazing process to watch. And it's something I've realized is kind of like anybody's, you know, growth journeys, like Louis will always have things he can be working on and should be working on. But at this point, he's reliably alerting my highs and my lows. He alerts 15 to sometimes like up to 40 minutes ahead of my CGM. He will be sound asleep and he will wake up to wake me up at night. And wow. So it's just been, you know, when I think about like, could I go without a CGM? I'm like, yes, it shouldn't be that hard mentally because I have Louis and he does such a good job. And like, anytime I doubt him and I'm like, dude, like, why are you alerting me? Like my, you know, blood sugar is 125 and stable. 30 minutes later, I'll be like 70 or, you know, above 180. And like, he's not wrong these days. Like he's not wrong. He tells me if it's high or low, he's very good at his job, but it's been a lot of time. Like it takes a lot of time to go through this training process, but it's been one of the most rewarding processes that I've ever been a part of. And I've been able to draft other people in it, other Risley related members. I think Nicole talked about her dog training experience as well when she was on the podcast a few months ago. And so I got her involved with MediDogs too. And we're slowly expanding our New York MediDogs training crew. But it's been a really fun experience as well.
Have you and Nicole ever been with the dogs together? Like, Nicole?
Oh yeah.
So what happens? I'm curious, like what happens when, if Nicole's blood sugar goes low, does Louis alert her as well? Like it or high? Has that ever happened?
Well, I would say the dogs being together is chaos because Rue is a puppy with a lot of energy and it's just fun. And, you know, Rue, her dog is so much bigger than my dog. And so it's a little bit of chaos when we get them together, but it's been fun. But we met Rue and Rue was, I think Nicole had Rue for like 2 days at the time when we first put the dogs together. So they have known each other on and off for a while. But the hardest is like we had a hang recently with the six of us, you know, girls with type 1 living in New York. And it was all six people and Louis. And so that's a time when he's like, oh my God, what is happening? I'm around six diabetics. Like there are so many scents. So there are times where he'll alert other people. The first person he ever like false alerted on, it wasn't really a false alert because it was Megan. She was like, it was me. Like, I think this is me. But he alerted me for her, which was interesting. So that was at my like 1 year diversity gathering that we did that was a mix of my type 1 and non-type 1 friends. So that was probably the first time he alerted to somebody else's blood sugar. But now when we all get together, like it's a little bit chaotic. Usually he'll alert me for other people's lows or highs, but sometimes he'll go around and he'll alert them too. And they just kind of ignore it because he's really only supposed to get rewarded when it's me.
That's amazing. It was you and Nicole really exposed me both to like what a really like the process of having a diabetic alert dog looks like, yeah. And also the benefits. Like I think I if you don't know somebody, you really don't understand. You're like, is that necessary? Like, does it really, you know, work? Like what's the benefits? And, you know, seeing you and then the other people who share on like TikTok and for the kids and just like, it is to your point, like, yeah. A silver lining, especially if you are, you know, an animal person. And I even just think about, for me, like in the past 2 years, starting horseback riding and just like how therapeutic that is, like having Chris and I don't have a dog yet, but he asks me every day. But we like to have like that animal like presence. It's just, it is so calming. So, I mean, I think dogs and like they're, you know, humans already have a great bond, but then like the next level of them also being so connected to your scent to be able to tell you if you're low or high is probably just like, he's your whole world.
Yeah, he is my whole world. He was my whole world before I got diabetes, and then he took an even bigger chunk of it, and I didn't know that was possible when we started this journey together. But I mean, I think the greatest part about it is the like confidence I have in him, and that we're a team. Like, we do this together. It's been a really big bonding point for us, and it's helped so much with my confidence. Like, I was struggling with sleeping and feeling good about going to bed and my blood sugars overnight. And like, now I just don't worry about that as much, because I'm like, you know what, even if my CGM fails, even if it's off, like, Louie's going to wake me up and it's going to be okay. And so I think having that added layer of comfort, when like my technology, I'm grateful for it every day, but it has had its ups and downs recently of like days where it's not working or it's reading wrong. And I'm like, you know what, like, it says this, but Louie is not alerting, so I'm going to trust Louie. And like, at this point, like, I trust him more than I trust my CGM. And that's just like a really amazing feeling.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think there's a lot of people who are going to listen to this. I'm sure we'll come up with some title that has like newly diagnosed maybe in it, but that are either that like in that first year or second year around that time frame. And I think 16 or 17 years didn't even know what the term diversity was. Like, that was something that like we, you know, not we like you and I, but like we as the community like created. And I, you know, once started like working obviously in the space and getting involved in the social end of things, I'm like, oh, that is such a cool, you know, way to acknowledge your anniversary. And I think a lot of people have different feelings about it. Some people, you know, will acknowledge it as their diversity, but maybe not want to celebrate it. But for you, you went hard. You threw a party. So you are not in that camp. Everything that you did, everything that you put together for that party has been like passed through Risley members, because somehow like just it caught wind. And so there's people that you don't even know that literally are doing like the kind of template that you had for everybody over and what you had them do, which is so cool. So can you
share? And I took it from other people too. I can't take the credit.
So you took it from somebody else. So somewhere along the line,
I think Coach Emily might have started a lot of it, because I took a bunch of her ideas. She sent them to me. So I'll give Emily credit where credit to is
you.
Due.
I thought Coach Emily did that. All right.
She was first.
Okay, so we can so far trace it back to Coach Emily on the Risley team. But can you share a little bit about what you did for your diversity for other people who just like, I think not even to just celebrate their diversity as like something for them, but to create a format for getting the people who are closest to you like involved in a way that isn't like, let me sit down and like tell you how diabetes impacts me.
Well, you know, I did pull things from a bunch of different people. A lot of what I had seen was a dead pancreas party. And one of the girls in our New York crew had done that. And I was like, this is very cool. I love this. I love finding a way to celebrate, but it felt a little morbid to me. Don't want to bash somebody else's party, because it looked great. But I was like, you know, like, I'm going to throw a retirement party, because retirement parties are more festive. And because I was still honeymooning, I'm still honeymooning today. I was like, you know what, this feels more like a retirement than like a funeral. So like, I'm going to do that. And so my theme was, you know, like, I had a crown that said like, congrats on your retirement, or no, I think it said the legend has retired. And I thought that was funny to be referring to my pancreas as a legend at the time. And I wanted to be games, and I really intentionally wanted it to mix the community of people I'd met through type one with my friends and my family who have been, you know, my rocks and my support system throughout. And so we did a mix. We, you know, had like pin the CGM on the abdomen, and we had like guess how many carbs, and some trivia of like how, you know, how often do you change a Dexcom and how often do you change an Omnipod and like all of that. And it was very funny to see people getting passionate about it. But it was important for me to mix, you know, the type ones and the non-type ones in my life to kind of spread the support system, to spread the understanding, to like kind of get it more. And I also think that like still to this day, when it's other people post on social media about their diversity or mention it, like, I don't know if I should be saying like, congrats on like surviving another year, like happy diversity, like, because I do think the day means different things for different people. For me, I think I used it as like, one, I was out of town for my birthday, you know, that year. So I was like, this is kind of going to be my birthday party and like all in one, which is like a little bit of a weird thing. I had just decided to move back to New York full time. So I was like, this is me like kind of like cementing myself in New York. And it was probably the start of that like reflection process that, you know, led to the Modern Love article and whatnot. And, you know, I had recently come out of a long-term relationship that who knows the role that diabetes played in that decision and that, you know, way I evolved there and thinking about what I needed and how to prioritize like where I wanted to be in life and where I want to live and who I want to surround myself with. But I think the months leading up to the diversity had been a little bit heavier, a little bit more like, what's happening in my life? Big picture questions. And I just needed a way to like channel some fun into diabetes and go out with the bang. So we had great food. We had great time. We had great people. That the diabetes crew that came was really awesome. Like as a group, we've done so many fun things from like bowling to like holiday parties and dinners and happy hours. And, you know, even just like this weekend, this coming weekend, this is a spoiler alert, but we're going to a gimme disco like dancing situation together. Like, I don't know what it is, but one of our crew members is moving away. Oh. So this is our going away party combined. So we're excited to go out with a bang, but like we've tried to put the fun into, you know, we met through diabetes. It's something people have a negative connotation with a lot of time, but like we don't, and we, you know, have found each other through it. And so it was a way to celebrate that too.
Wow. I mean, truly, like every time I hear you talk about what you do with the group of girls who are in New York City that you met through Risley, I am like, I cannot believe there was a time years ago when I doubted people like wanted community. And I was like, no, like one-on-one coaching, like I don't know if we'll ever do group. And it turns out all everybody ever wants now is like group coaching. And the fact that you have like so many people I hear go to like weddings of people who they met through group coaching, and like you guys are so tight. Like it really does, I think, speak to how a lot of people view community as like the last thing on the list of like getting empowered with diabetes is like, oh, like, and community, like going to a random, you know, event. And it's like that actually for many people, and for especially you, it sounds like was actually like the core and the foundational element, and everything else from like the education, the tools, the strategies, you know, Louie was built on top of that. And it goes with, you know, without saying your background in, you know, as a social worker and a community builder, like it makes sense, but you're a testament, you know, to that.
Yeah, I think it normalized it. Like, I think that was the biggest thing, was like meeting so many other type ones who were roughly my age, even though like, I think some of us have a lot of similarities, some of us are really different, but like we have this bond because we have type one, like that's just there. And it's something that like, there are some things that we can go to this group that we can't go to anyone else in our lives about. And I think having that and having that trust that comes with it has been so special. And to have that so early on in my diagnosis, like, I know is a luxury that not everybody has. And it's been so special, and it normalized every experience for me, because there's almost nothing that I can go to this group with being like, has anybody ever had this happen to them? And like, hear crickets. Like, no, like everyone has had it. Like everyone's been there in some capacity or some way they can relate by nature of living with this and having, you know, a few more years, or in some case, 10, 15, 20 more years than I do with the disease. And so having that community to lean on and rely on, in addition to the other supports that I've been able to, you know, put in my life in terms of like my doctor and my care team and my, you know, therapist and my coaching and my, you know, my dog trainer, who I joke is also my dog therapist. Like we have, like, I've been able to fill my life up with so many different support systems, and they've all helped me get to where I am today. And I'm just so grateful for that. And from my family and friends who have no relation to my, you know, type one care, but have become critical supports in my type one journey.
Well, I think that is a great note to end on. I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, because there are a lot of people who, you know, 5-10 years into their diagnosis are still searching for, you know, what is going to enable me to feel a sense of empowerment and confidence and move forward in my life and climb those mountains that I want to, you know, climb, or run those streets that I want to run in maybe Brooklyn, maybe New York City. We still don't know where the half marathon is. But thank you so much. I'm so happy that you're part of the Risley family and the community, and cannot wait to cheer you on at the half marathon in a little bit.
Well, thanks for welcoming me in with open arms.
Of course. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here with me today and listening to this episode of Reclaim Your Rise. To let us know that the episodes we're putting out are impactful, and to help us get our street cred up and let everyone else know that this is something worthy of their time to listen to, please leave a rating and review on our Apple Podcast, send the show to other people impacted by T1D or maybe even your doctor, and share it on social media tagging @RisleyHealth and @Lauren_Bongiorno. New episodes of Reclaim Your Rise come out every single Tuesday, so make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so that you never miss a beat. Thanks again for listening, and as always, remember, diabetes is a challenge that we did not choose, but one that we can rise above.